It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Leaders in Burkina Faso reportedly agreed to a year-long civilian transition period. The Ebola death toll is revised downward. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Following crisis talks Wednesday, representatives of Burkina Faso's army, political parties, and civil society have agreed a civilian transitional administration will run the country for about a year until elections can be held. Those talks were mediated by a delegation of West African leaders following last week's departure of longtime President Blaise Compaoré. The presidents of Ghana, Nigeria, and Senegal arrived in Ouagadougou and met as well with the country's military-appointed interim leader, Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zida. Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama, chairman of the ECOWAS West African bloc, said there is a general consensus in favor of an interim civilian administration.
So that we can embrace all the segments of Burkina society in order to take the decisions that we have to take to establish a stable democracy. And so, yes, we are upset with our brothers about what happened and our sisters, but it is important for us to also involve them so that whatever we agree will be one that is agreed to by all society.
Burkina Faso's military took control of the country Friday after Mr. Compaoré resigned and fled following violent protests. Hospital sources said at least 10 were killed, 200 wounded. The World Health Organization Wednesday said a slowdown in the spread of the deadly Ebola virus continues in Liberia, although it's still rising in Sierra Leone and remains stable in Guinea. 64% of all new cases reported in Sierra Leone over the past 3 weeks. The WHO revised downward the cumulative death toll with 440 fewer deaths reported in Sierra Leone than in data released last week. This is VOA News. The medical charity group Doctors Without Borders has been distributing Ebola protection kits to residents in the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Anna Halford is MSF's distribution coordinator.
The kit contains material that people can use if they are obliged by circumstance to approach or to a patient with suspected Ebola or to disinfect their house, again, if they're obliged to do so by circumstance, after an Ebola patient or body has been taken away.
The distributors operate under a no-contact policy where teams cordon off a safe area to distribute the kits safely. The World Bank's private sector arm Wednesday pledged nearly $500 million to support trade, investment, and employment in the three hardest-hit West African countries. That brings nearly $1 billion, the bank's commitment to fight Ebola. Meanwhile, the tourist chiefs of West Africa have urged travelers Wednesday not to boycott the region, insisting the Ebola epidemic is confined to just three countries. Tourism has been impacted in East and Southern Africa, where no Ebola cases have been reported. In Madrid, Spanish nurse Teresa Romero, the first person outside Africa to contract Ebola, fought back tears as she left a Madrid hospital after being declared cured. She acknowledged she remains weak after spending a month in isolation. She got the disease after volunteering to care for two Catholic Spanish missionaries who had the virus and were brought back to Spain for treatment. They both died. UN peacekeepers say Sudan's military has denied them access to an area of Darfur where hundreds of girls and women were allegedly raped last weekend. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's spokesman, Stefan Dujarric, said personnel from the UN African Union mission in Darfur were turned back at a checkpoint when they tried to go to North Darfur village of Tabit on Tuesday.
The mission is making this call after a verification patrol was denied access to Tabit in North Darfur by Sudanese military at a checkpoint. The mission is deeply concerned about media reports of an alleged mass rape of 200 women and girls in Tabit and is investigating the veracity of this information.
Radio Dabanga, which based its report on a village elder, said the local army commander ordered Tabit residents to find a soldier who had gone missing from his garrison. The statement said the same commander visited the village Monday and tried to apologize for his soldier's actions, but that residents rejected the apology. Four Tunisian soldiers were killed, 11 wounded Wednesday in an attack blamed on suspected Islamist militants who attacked a bus with soldiers on board near the Algerian border. The attack comes while the North African country prepares for its first free presidential election November 23rd, and only 10 days after parliamentary elections that were won by the secular Nida Tunis party. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There are reports Burkina Faso's military and political parties have agreed on a one-year transition period as West African leaders meet today to discuss the crisis.
The bottom line is that there should be restoration of peace, tranquility, and constitutional transfer of power to an appropriate authority in that country.
Haruna Wakani is the spokesman for ECOWAS. Attacks against civilians are said to be on the rise in the Central African Republic. Human rights groups say the noose is tightening around freedom of expression in Angola, and there are calls for Sierra Leone's government to release a detained journalist.
The Sierra Leone Association of Journalists is very, very worried now because David Tambayo is sick. He's suffering from hypertension. I was there when the doctor took his blood pressure, and it was over 220.
Calvin Lewis is president of the Sierra Leone Association of Journalists. Human rights groups urged the United Nations to condemn abuses in Egypt, and the UN's I Belong campaign aims to end statelessness. Those stories plus Marco Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Let reports from Burkina Faso say the country's military, political parties, and civil society leaders have agreed on a one-year transition period followed by elections in 2015. The announcement was made late Wednesday following talks mediated by three West African leaders. Meanwhile, heads of state and government officials from the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, will meet today, Thursday, at an extraordinary summit in Ghana's capital, Accra. ECOWAS spokesman Haruna Wakani tells reporter Peter Clotty the crisis in Burkina is high on the agenda.
The two important things on the agenda are this: the outbreak of the Ebola, the containment, the efforts so far made, and the successes and the challenges that are still outstanding. And then the, of course, unfortunate developments in Burkina Faso.
There are concerns that the ECOWAS and the African Union appear not to be moving fast, and there appear to be contradictions. The AU is giving two-week ultimatum. The African Union leaders in African Union are saying, well, we'll give them a year period. How are they going to streamline this to ensure that there's one voice when they meet after they come out with their recommendations for a smooth transition in Burkina Faso?
Well, it's a matter of course, the two bodies are working relentlessly towards achieving success of the situation. Don't forget that when things like this crop up, they are bound to be several dimensions to it. But the bottom line is that there should be restoration of peace, tranquility, and constitutional transfer of power to an appropriate authority in that country. So it isn't really a matter of contradiction. It may be just matters of perception from the various divides of society. Ultimately, the two bodies are working towards achieving the same goal of ensuring a constitutional transfer of power.
How is ECOWAS helping in this directive, especially when this forms under ECOWAS's purview to ensure peace, stability, and a smooth transition to democracy or restoration of democracy in Burkina Faso?
You know, a high-powered delegation has just been to Burkina Faso to speak with the authorities there. So believe me, it's because of the importance attached to this development that's why the heads of state could afford to carve out time within their very busy schedules to do that. So surely the regional body is doing everything possible to ensure that this crisis does not escalate. And then the constitutional authority is restored, and that will pave way for development in the country.
Haruna Wakani is the spokesman for ECOWAS. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Ghana's capital, Accra. The Sierra Leone Association of Journalists is calling on President Ernest Bai Koroman's government to either release radio talk show host David Tambayo or hospitalize him because they say his life is at risk. Calvin Lewis, president of the association, says Tambayo suffers from high blood pressure. VOA made numerous attempts to reach Sierra Leone's Minister of Information, Alpha Kanu, for a comment, but he could not be reached immediately. Published reports say Tamayo, who hosts the weekly monologue radio program on Citizen FM, was arrested after a guest on his program criticized President Koroma's handling of the Ebola epidemic. Journalists Association President Kelvin Lewis says his group is calling on the government to respect Tamayo's basic human rights.
What I can say, James, is that the Seattle Association of Journalists is very, very worried now because David Tambayo is sick. He's suffering from hypertension. I was there when the doctor took his blood pressure, and it was over 220. The doctor, in fact, said that he should be hospitalized, but then he's been taken to the correctional center. And we do not believe that in the correctional center there is a medical facility that would be able to treat him because of his condition.
Kelvin, what can you tell us about the situation leading to his arrest? We understand that an executive order signed by President Ernest Bai Koroma led to his arrest. What were the circumstances?
Well, I visited him at the Criminal Investigation Department where he was detained overnight. And in the morning, he told me that police officers had gone to his office and they had invited him. And when he got to the headquarters of the CID, that they showed him an executive warrant signed by the president on the allegation that he had committed an offense which was incitement. And it was because of that that he was being detained. Now, I understand that it might have something to do with his program, which he normally broadcasts over the weekend, called Monologue. I did not listen to the program myself, so I cannot talk about it. What I know is that he had an interview with the public relations officer of the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party, and he also had an interview with the vice president of Sierra Leone. I don't know which one of those interviews was the offensive one, but the government is saying that incitement was committed, acts of incitement were committed during that program.
Let me say, first of all, Kelvin, that we tried several times to reach the Minister of Information of Sierra Leone or anybody in the government to respond to that. We are not able to get any of them, but your association follow issues pertaining to press freedom in your country. What is the situation there? Is the government of President Ernest Bai Koroma, is it more open to press freedom or what?
Well, like any African country, we've had our ups and downs, and it's always a hot and cold relationship. We've had journalists being arrested, I mean, journalists locked up. In fact, for a very long time, we've had journalists who were convicted of criminal libel. I mean, the relationship is hot and cold. Sometimes we're fine, sometimes we're not.
Kelvin Lewis is president of the Sierra Leone Association of Journalists. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Attacks against civilians in Central African Republic are on the rise, according to a report released today, Thursday, by Amnesty International. A senior crisis response advisor at Amnesty, Joanne Mariner, tells Reiki Shryak that the UN peacekeeping mission in the country needs to take more action to protect civilians amid the increasing sectarian attacks in the country's central region.
I think the UN peacekeepers need to do more aggressive patrolling, particularly rural areas, the villages where these attacks are happening, and also there needs to be arrests of the leaders of both the Antifa and the Salika forces that are responsible for these attacks. A lot of the attacks are carried on repeatedly in some of the same areas. We know which populations are at risk, and there needs to be more aggressive efforts to prevent and put a stop to the attacks.
We know that the stabilization mission known as MINUSCA is still several thousand troops short of its mandated number of 12,000 troops. If they lived up to the numbers that they promised, does Amnesty think this would decrease the violence?
Having additional troops would certainly help. Central African Republic is a very large country. There are areas where the state is absolutely not present, where there are no local officials, there are no police, and there are really no peacekeepers. To have some peacekeepers there to fill that gap would be crucial. But I think even more important is how those peacekeepers act, how boldly they act to protect the civilian population. You know, are they aggressively patrolling? Do people feel protected? Do the anti-Balaka and the Seleka forces feel that the peacekeepers are there to protect civilians, or do they feel that the civilian population is left unprotected and therefore vulnerable to attack?
What are some of the most concerning things that Amnesty recently saw when they went into the more rural areas of CAR to conduct this research into recent attacks?
We documented recent attacks both by anti-Balaka and Seleka forces, as well as by armed Pul, ethnic Pul, who are allied with the Seleka or also have created kind of a spin-off group from the Seleka. Just for example, one of the attacks was on a site where there are displaced people in a church compound in Dekwa. Those people have been there for months. The local Seleka commander has expressed unhappiness with the fact that there was this displaced person site for quite a long time and has made a number of threats. And finally, on October 10th, he followed through on those threats and did a direct attack on the site. Hundreds of people fled and tried to find safety inside the main building of the camp where the priests and the sisters live. So you had, you know, literally 100 people crowded into a living room, and the Seleka shot directly into that living room, you know, directly trying to kill civilians, and succeeded in killing five who were taking refuge there, including two children and a woman.
That was Joanne Mariner, a senior crisis response advisor at Amnesty International. She was speaking to Ricky Shryaki from Bangui, the Central African Republic. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 6th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Angola's government is tightening the noose around free expression, says a top Angolan journalist and an international rights watchdog. In Johannesburg, viewers Anita Power listened to the harrowing experiences faced by Angolan journalist Rafael Marquez de Marais and brings us this report.
Angolan journalist Rafael Marquez de Marais was last arrested in 2013. The veteran reporter was covering a court case for his anti-corruption website Maka Angola and trying to interview two of the defendants outside the courthouse in Luanda. He describes that experience.
What was striking was not the stomping on the back I received directly from the commander of this special police unit. It was not the severe blow with a baton to the back of my neck. It was not even the fact that the police filmed us being abused at the headquarters of this infamous unit for the pleasure of their superiors. What was striking to me was the ability of the judicial system to execute such a robbery of justice.
Since his first arrest in 1999 as a newspaper reporter, Marquez has flirted with danger in a nation that rights groups say is getting increasingly repressive. His critics say he has sown dissent and defamed the government by alleging corruption and calling the nation's leader of 35 years a dictator, a charge for which he was tried, sentenced to 6 months in prison, and ordered to pay damages directly to the president. At Maka Angola, he continues to focus on what he says are two of the most important stories in his southern African nation, corruption and human rights abuses. He's still in the hot seat, he told hundreds of academics, journalists, and students who came to hear him speak at Johannesburg's University of the Witwatersrand. He says some of the generals are seeking more than $1 million in damages over his reports on human rights abuses. The Committee to Protect Journalists has documented numerous instances of arrest, intimidation, and killings of journalists in Angola. Since 1992, the year Marquez joined the state-owned Journal de Angola, 10 journalists have been killed on the job, and the CPJ classifies 7 of those deaths as murder. VOA News' parent organization, the Broadcasting Board of Governors, says 4 VOA journalists have been targeted by authorities since 2006. New York-based Human Rights Watch has also documented increasing repression in Angola. HRW Southern Africa Director Tiseke Kasambala says the government has not just stifled the press, but also anyone who protests against the government in any form. Angolan authorities have said in public forums, most recently at a United Nations review of the human rights record, that the government respects free speech and allows protests. And Marquez says the government has used him as part of their argument.
Members of the regime are not shy about saying that the fact that I am alive and still doing my work is evidence of democracy in Angola and the magnanimity of the president.
Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Human rights organizations are calling on the United Nations to condemn what they say is worsening abuses in Egypt and to investigate the killings of peaceful protesters in 2013. This appeal follows an assessment of Egypt's human rights record under a regular UN review process. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Under the Universal Periodic Review process, UN member states have their human rights records examined by the UN Human Rights Council every 4 years. Rights activists who attended Wednesday's session in Geneva think Egypt got a fairly easy ride. This does not make them happy, considering what they allege are the crimes committed under Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. The activists say a few strong interventions were made by some countries, notably the United States, Turkey, Norway, and the Netherlands. Otherwise, they say statements by members of the international community regarding Egypt's repressive actions against its people were generally weak. The rights activists say they are particularly worried by the lackluster response of many European and Latin American countries. The Egyptian government has set a deadline of November 10th for all non-governmental organizations to register under a highly restrictive law or face criminal charges. Human Rights Watch advocate Philippe Dam says this law is having a chilling effect on human rights defenders.
There was actually no indication given by the Egyptian delegation today that this would be lifted. Today, a group of seven high-profile human rights NGOs from Egypt did publicly state that they decided not to participate in the UPR for fears of reprisal. Many NGO activists also recently left the country for fears of prosecution based on the 10th of November deadline, but also other threats and harassment.
Similarly, Dam says there is no indication that the Egyptian government intends to release the report of the fact-finding commission established to look into the killing of more than 1,000 protesters in July and August 2013. Following the ouster of the country's Islamist president, Mohamed Morsi. To date, he says the government has held no member of the security forces accountable for the killings. The Egyptian authorities estimate they have imprisoned at least 22,000 people in unrest since the military removed Mr. Morsi from power in July 2013. The Egyptian Center for Economic and Social Rights, which has documented arrests by name and date, puts that number at 41,000. Amnesty International researcher Nicolas Piachot says Egypt is facing an unprecedented human rights crisis and its rights reputation is in tatters. Speaking on a Skype line from London, Piachot says torture is rife in Egypt's prisons and police stations. He says enforced disappearances are on the rise. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United Nations has started a new social media campaign called I Belong to help the 10 million people worldwide who are denied a nationality and the rights that go with it. Christian Roby reports from Dakar on what statelessness means in Africa and how the UN proposes to eliminate it by the year 2024.
Most stateless people are born that way, meaning their parents either never had or lost their nationalities. Some people lose their nationality after a divorce. Others lose it after they flee their country during a conflict. Birth and marriage records can be destroyed during natural disasters or violence. The laws of some countries can also make it complicated for immigrants or their children to claim nationality where they reside. In West Africa, the United Nations says close to 1 million people are stateless or at a risk of statelessness. Most of them are in Ivory Coast, where the question of who is Ivorian has contributed to two civil wars. Deputy Regional Representative for the UN Refugee Agency, Mathis Leroute, says migration plays a big role.
L'Afrique de l'Ouest, c'est une région la plus mobile du monde. Historiquement, les gens ont énormément bougé. Et là,
West Africa is one of the most mobile parts of the world, he says. Historically, people move around a lot there. We've seen it recently with the refugees leaving Mali, Nigeria, and the Central African Republic. Leroute adds that there is an enormous percentage of people that move who are then not able to prove their nationality, and this is not just refugees. He says migration, in general, highlights legal weaknesses. It's hard to know the true scope of the problem, as many countries don't have a way to count stateless individuals. Senior Regional Protection Officer for the UN Refugee Agency, Emmanuel Meat, says these people are, in a legal sense, living ghosts.
Et lui sait qu'il n'appartient pas à ce pays parce qu'il n'a pas ce document, la nationalité, ce document qui fait qu'on a une identité.
She says, a stateless person does not have the documents that give him a national identity, that allow him to claim certain rights. He cannot go to school. If he has a child, he cannot register the birth. He cannot register his marriage. He cannot sign a contract with an employer or a landlord. He doesn't have rights. Meat says these problems are hidden from public view. The person is there among society. He's not invisible, but the trials he is going through are. That, Meat says, is why a key part of the UN strategy is to raise awareness that statelessness exists. Having a nationality is considered a fundamental human right. The United Nations is calling on countries to ratify two international conventions that recognize the rights of stateless people and lay out measures to prevent statelessness from occurring. She adds that West Africa is leading other regions in the world in signing these conventions, but countries there must now also take action to put them in place. Kristen Roby for VOA News, Dakar.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak African Sports News, we begin with football. Portugal edged Morocco 6-4 in a beach football friendly played in the Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, on Wednesday. Today, Thursday, Morocco challenged Iran. In rugby news, despite losing their bid to stage an IRB 7 series event, Kenya is set to construct a new rugby stadium, the Kenya Rugby Union head Mwangi Muthee disclosed in Nairobi on Wednesday. Kenya made an unsuccessful bid to stage one of the events in the IRB 7 aside series, leaving Nelson Mandela Bay in South Africa as the only venue for the nine-leg series on the continent. Singapore, the French capital Paris, and Vancouver in Canada will replace Glasgow in Scotland, Japan's capital Tokyo, and Las Vegas in the United States of America as venues for the series this year. Muthee told the Nairobi media that the planned construction of a rugby stadium in Nairobi has the government's backing. It is aimed at making Kenya an international rugby competition destination. Turning to athletics, defending champions Philmon Rono of Kenya and Ethiopian Jeanette Yaleu seek to retain the men's and women's crowns at the Obudu Africa Mountain Running Championships in Obudu, Cross River State, South Nigeria on Saturday. Ronu's path to victory will be much harder given the expected challenge from Ethiopian three-time winner Abebe Dinkesa and Hunegao Mesfin, who won the men's race 4 years ago. Meanwhile, tomorrow Friday, as a dress rehearsal for the main event, there'll be a race for the VIP, whereas for the first time, the Cross River State Governor, Senator Liel Imoke, will don his running gear for action. Staying in Nigeria, 17-year-old Abdel Rahman Afez won the boys' 400 meters in 48.70 seconds at the North Central Athletics Championships in Ilorin, the Kwara State capital in southwest Nigeria. Esther Ashamu prevailed in the girls' 400 meters in 54.94 seconds. The competition marks the start of Nigeria's build-up to the Africa Youth and Junior Athletics Championships next year. Nigeria are defending champions at both African events. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Lit report from Burkina Faso said the country's military, political parties, and civil society leaders have agreed on a one-year transition period followed by elections in 2015. That's it for this Thursday, November 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.